Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Tribune podcast. This week is coming after the end of the Bundesliga season. There was a lot of drama, a lot of tension, a lot of excitement. Relegation was decided at the weekend. Championship party has happened. We are obviously recording before the DFB Pokal. And 2 weeks for the Champions League final, but unfortunately there won't be any Bundesliga sides in that. The topic today is the Bundesliga team of the season. I'm joined by Stefan Bienkowski.
Hello.
And yeah, well, why don't we just dive right into it?
Yeah, sure. So let's make a point of saying that more often than not with these team of the seasons, they can get quite gimmicky and they can actually often break the rules. And by that I mean you get newspapers, websites, broadcasters, whatever, and they often morph the formation to suit, you know, they're prejudiced. So you often find with these things they'll be playing some stupid formation like a 3-2-1-4 or something to accommodate four strikers.
Or in the case of one national broadcaster just playing strikers in defence.
Yeah, we are above that nonsense. So today Ross has a 4-3-3. I have a 4-2-3-1, and I think we've got very little overlap. So it should be a good discussion. And then afterwards we can jump into the players who didn't make either of our teams, and then hopefully by the end of it we've covered everyone who deserves merit at the end of this Bundesliga season.
Yeah, so I mean let's just dive right in at the most important position in the pitch, in my opinion, the goalkeeper, the goaltender. I have gone for Bernd Leno from Bayer Leverkusen. I think he has been so important for them throughout the season. Even when they were playing poorly, he was still, you know, delivering, you know, top performances every single week. Possibly one of their most important players, I think, certainly including Chicharito and Julian Brandt, who have had really hot patches at different points in the season, but Bernd Leno has been really consistent. He's had 13 clean sheets this season. That's the second highest in the Bundesliga behind Manuel Neuer, of course. And he saved one penalty, so he's doing pretty well. That penalty was saved in the game against Schalke, the 3-2 game, which was kind of one of the most impressive results of the season, because that kind of was right in the middle of when they were, you know, making that push towards the Champions League. I mean, I think we should probably clarify why we're not picking someone like Manuel Neuer. I mean, I think you have to say that, I mean, for a goalkeeper, he doesn't really have a lot to do most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, goalkeeping is undoubtedly one of the most important parts of this, of any team. And I think the guys that, I mean, you've picked Bernd Leno, I'll explain who I've picked in a minute, but when it comes to Manuel Neuer, it doesn't feel as though he adds points to this Bayern team, because, you know, they've already beaten teams by the time he gets to make his first save, maybe in the 60th minute or so. For example, you've picked Bernd Leno. Before I jump into that, my choice is Jan Sommer at Gladbach, and for perhaps the exact same reasons as you said with Leno. Gladbach have been exceptional fun this season. Under a new coach, they have grown into this gung-ho side who really tend to throw caution to the wind, whether that's through design or simple, you know, lack of maybe tactics or quality at the back. There's no denying that Jan Sommer has at times dug this team out of trouble. They look as though a team who can attack without any real pressure, but in defence, he looked so shaky this season since Lucien Favre has left. And Jan Sommer, to me, has really earned his place in this team. And from one week to the next, it really does seem as though, despite the fact that Gladbach have no problem scoring goals, he seems to be really making an effort, or at least did now the season's over, ensuring that they weren't conceding just as many. I mean, Gladbach's defensive record this season is horrendous. They're maybe fifth or sixth in terms of goals conceded. But it could have been far worse, I think, without Jan Sommer. So in terms of a goalkeeper who has been kept busy all season and has kept his team in certain games, I think Jan Sommer is up there with any. And it is exactly why someone like Manuel Neuer wouldn't be in that team, because despite the fact that quite clearly is probably the best goalkeeper in the Bundesliga, in the world perhaps, he hasn't been as busy as these two.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bayern probably have been, certainly in Pep Guardiola's 3 years, I think this year they've actually been more dominant than probably in the previous two. I think they've been better. They've been more dominant in games. I think the style of football was more kind of like, you know, a bit more power play. And so Manuel Neuer's involvement is not, I don't think is as big as it has been in the last 2 years. I mean, I can, yeah, it comes to my mind, but I can remember games when Manuel Neuer you know, saved Bayern a lot of the time last year. He was really important to them. This year, I'm not sure he has been. I don't think Bayern also, I don't say they allow him to play that sweeper keeper, but I think that's certainly not been as prominent this year as it was in years gone by. I think, as we'll probably touch on later, I think someone like Jerome Boateng, for example, has been so good in the first half of the season before his injury that, you know, it didn't really matter whether Manuel Neuer was there or not because the defence was so strong. So,
Before we move on to the next position, if I could poke one hole in your Bernd Leno criticism, because Leno was perhaps the first one that I thought of when I thought of goalkeepers of the season. The only reason I put Sommer above him was because I thought Leno was actually very shaky at the start of the season. That might not have been his fault. The Leverkusen in general looked a little shaky until Roger Schmidt really pulled them together in the last, you know, 8 or 10 games of the season. But before the winter break, I really thought Leno looked all over the place. But he has he's found his composure, and he's now going into the summer looking like himself after signing a new contract with Leverkusen as well. But that's the only reason I went with Sommer above Leno, because I thought he was a little inconsistent at the start of the season. We now move on to the defensive back line, and in traditional sense, we shall start with the right back. And this is a position where I don't think we're going to have much disagreement, because we both actually picked the same player. So, Ross, I'll give you the honours of saying who we both think has been the right back this season, perhaps why.
I think a lot of people would agree that Mitchell Weiser has been... He's been one of the standout performers this year at right back. Certainly for Hertha at the start of the season, when they had such an outstanding first half of the season, it was their second best Hinrunde in history. And Weiser was so important to that. I mean, I think we probably should give a bit of backstory to it as well. Obviously, Weiser came through at Bayern Munich. He was one of their most impressive young talents. And maybe that's one of the criticisms of Pep Guardiola, that he didn't get the most out of Mitchell Weiser. We should bear in mind that he did play in a Champions League semi-final. So, I mean, he obviously was given the opportunity at Bayern to an extent, and he did okay. I don't think he was particularly noteworthy in his performances, but he did fairly well. And I think it was the logical move, I think, to seek a more regular playing time, because obviously at Bayern Munich you have Philipp Lahm and Rafinha who could play at right back. So, he's gone to Hertha, smart move, playing in the Bundesliga every week, and yeah, for me, he's been outstanding defensively. Very surprised at how good he is defensively, actually. You know, like, obviously he has the speed to get back, but obviously with the way they have to play, they play quite compact, they play quite a rigid structure, and Weiser's really important to that. Certainly in terms of going forward as well, his contribution is quite important, overlaps well, you know, he's got good technique in the last third, so for me... For me, it's a no-brainer. I can't even think of a competitor for him. I mean, Philipp Lahm's not had the greatest of seasons. He turned up a little bit in spring in Champions League games, but I think he's not been as impressive as he has been in previous years.
Yeah, I think you're right. There hasn't been many competitors in that position. The one player that really I could think of as an alternative, and I was going to pick, was Lukas Piszczek at Dortmund, who has looked back to his best this season, but... of course, I just don't think he's played enough games to warrant saying that he's had a great season. He's had a great maybe half season at Dortmund. But you're absolutely right. I think what's quite interesting is that at Bayern, he was still playing. He was still considered very much a winger up until maybe he left. He came through the youth team as a winger, as a forward as well. And he's now found his feet at Hertha as a right back, which is baffling. But this really seems like a breakthrough season for him in terms of his career. He's not exactly he's still young, but he's not like some 19-year-old who's just got into the game. He's been in the game for a while now, and he's now found his position at Hertha. And like you say, he's fantastic going forward, and he's fantastic in defence. I think perhaps the best compliment we can pay him is the number of Bayern fans who've said to me on Twitter this season, you know, I really wish we had Mitchell Weiser, because even though they do have Philipp Lahm, who I don't actually think's been that great this season, he's beginning to look his age, in my opinion. Mitchell Weiser, I think, would have been a great alternative to Rafinha, who... despite being one of Pep's most favoured players, perhaps. I'm not sure how to describe that, actually, but I think Mitchell Weiser is a far better player, and I think Bayern fans would have preferred to hold on to him and really see one of their own come through the team. Even if he hadn't showed the consistency that he did this season until he left.
I think another big compliment that you can pay for him is that he's possibly got a chance of being right back for Germany at European Championships. I don't know if Jogi Löw will make such a drastic change so late on. I mean... Löw is quite a conservative coach, and he tends to have quite a club-like mentality with his national team squads. You'll still pick Podolski, you'll still pick Kevin Volland, probably. You know, so I can't see him getting into the squad. But I think if you're looking at Germany's right backs now, given that Philipp Lahm's retired, I think you'd have to say that Weiser is certainly the most natural fit. I mean, Emre Can has played there, but I mean, Emre Can's been playing midfield for Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. So that, again, that's quite a big positional change for him. A major championship. Sebastian Rudi has played there for the German national team. Again, he's a central midfielder, but Weiser is playing right back for Hertha. So I think, for me, I think he should get a shot at right back. Certainly probably not going to happen at the European Championships, I don't think, but maybe going towards the next World Cup, he could be the starting choice there.
And of course, he represents Hertha Berlin, who have had an outstanding season in this campaign, so it's good that we get a Hertha player in there. Left back, we actually both have agreed on this one as well. Guys, we promised this, things will begin to diverge dramatically as we move into midfield, but at left back, we've both picked Marcel Schmelzer, haven't we, Ross?
Probably Dortmund's most improved player, I think, on last season. At the start of the season, I was just absolutely astonished at how much he'd improved. Obviously, you know, that pre-season he had with Tuchel has made a big impact. I think defensively, he looks much better. I think that was one of the big question marks about Schmelzer, was his defensive qualities. You know, he's played for the German national team a few times, and I can remember him playing against Switzerland, for example, and he's had an absolute shocker at left back. That's one of my abiding memories of Schmelzer. But I think this year, I think it's almost a sign that he's worked really, really hard. He's, you know, improved tactically. Obviously, his clear instructions doesn't really bomb on as much as he used to, which maybe is probably one of those reasons. But overall, I think he's been arguably one of Dortmund's most consistent performers throughout the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. I actually thought he might have left when Tuchel came in, because at the time, he'd just come off a horrendous season with Dortmund under Klopp, like much of the team, to be fair. And he had just 1 year left in his contract, which has now been extended. But he just looked like a player who was a bygone talent of Klopp's era. And the left-back position just looked like one that could have quite easily been upgraded under Tuchel. But to his credit, he's came in and Tuchel has worked his magic, like he has done with much of the players in this squad. We could probably name another three or four who've looked different under Tuchel this season. And you're right, because I think I've been exceptionally critical of Schmelzer in the past, because at times he looks out of place, he leaves holes in defence. And you're right, he's always looked good going forward. He's got a great cross on him, and he's quite happy dribbling up the wing. But at times, he leaves holes in the defence. He can lose his way, and it's quite interesting you point out that he doesn't seem to be moving forward as much. I think it's a credit that, I think one of the clear reasons that it seems as though he's improved under Tuchel is that Tuchel's probably taught him how to move around the pitch far more than Klopp may have done, in the sense that he doesn't leave his position as much, and the Dortmund backline in general just looks far stronger, and that might. And I think Schmelzer's increased intelligence on the pitch might be exactly why the man beside him, Mats Hummels, has actually looked a lot better this season, because the two of them just look far more solid beside each other than they have done. Looked far more porous under Klopp, and now this season they both look as though they actually know where they should be standing at all times. So,
That's a good segue into Mats Hummels, because you've got him in.
I do. Yeah, we'll go across the back. Yeah, well, we're on the centre backs now, actually. So yeah. My first central defender is Mats Hummels, who now the coming Bayern Munich player, but he has had an outstanding season for Borussia Dortmund, and I mean, there's no two ways around this. He's just looked back to his best under Tuchel, and I think at his best, Hummels is a great central defender, but a brilliant player, and I think now that this Dortmund team looks far more solid, he's been able to. He doesn't look as though he's having to put out as many fires as he did under Klopp, you know, where he seemed to be running around constantly, making last-ditch tackles. We've not seen as much of that, and he looks far more composed this season.
But you are quite a notable critic of Mats Hummels, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Well, I'm not so much a critic. I don't think he's a world-class defender. I think he's a great player. I don't think his best attributes in central defence are actually defending. But when it comes to, you know, central defenders in the Bundesliga this season, I don't think there's many who've been so necessary to the team. That defence has been built on Mats Hummels this season, and it'll be interesting to see how Tuchel replaces him next after the summer. But he's looked back to his best, and Mats Hummels at his best is undoubtedly one of the best central defenders in the league, so that's why I've gone with him.
Yeah, I think he's outstanding, but I haven't picked him, so there you go. I have gone for Itak Zulu, just because I wanted to have someone from Darmstadt in there. He is the embodiment of Darmstadt. He's the embodiment of the underdog. He is Mr. David against Goliath. Maybe he's Goliath because he is pretty big. But he's a bit of a warrior. And, I mean, Darmstadt's away record this year is the fourth best in the Bundesliga. You know, so I think someone has to be, you know, motivating everyone, organising everything, clearing those balls in the box. Because when you know we saw in games when they played, for example, against Bayer Leverkusen and they beat Bayer Leverkusen at the Bayer Arena, they were being pounded for the whole game. But defensively, they were always really assured. And even against Dortmund as well, they drew 2-2. I know that they were pretty lucky to get a last-minute goal, but that was a game that they kept Dortmund out for a really long time. And even against Bayern Munich, they led against Bayern Munich 1-0 at half-time. So they deserve a lot of credit. I mean, it's people say it's easy to defend, you know, backs to the wall. It's easy just to sit in your own box, but I don't think it is at all. I think you need to be really disciplined. You need to make sure that the back line, you know, the spaces between the back line aren't wide open. You've got to make sure that, you know, man marking is good, and I think he's done that. I think he's been a really outstanding performer. I mean, I must admit, I don't see him getting any big moves or anything. He's a guy who I think works well within the structure, but yeah, I mean, if you want a guy in the box to clear it, then I think Zulu's your man. Probably going for my more technically able centre half is Omar Toprak from Bayer Leverkusen. I think he's been brilliant this year. I think, again, represents what Leverkusen I think is about. You know, they bought him in, you know, about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, I think. And he's developed into an outstanding centre-back. He's quick, strong, powerful. He's been the captain for long spells in the season because Lars Bender was injured. And obviously now that Mats Hummels has gone to Bayern Munich, Toprak is one of the guys that people are suggesting to replace him at Borussia Dortmund. I'm not sure he would be a direct replacement for Mats Hummels. I think Hummels, his playmaking ability at the back is really outstanding. I don't think there are a lot of defenders out there that could replace Mats Hummels, to be honest. And Toprak, for me, just has been so consistent. You know, obviously Leverkusen have really turned their season around in the last few weeks. You know, at one point in, kind of, I think, February, March time, they were 7th, 8th in the Bundesliga. They'd just gone out of the Europa League to Villarreal, and I think people had thought about, you know, questioning whether Roger Schmidt was the right guy for the job. I mean, and how they've turned it around. And I think Toprak has been really important in that. He's been the one kind of major kind of constant point in that team. And yeah, I mean, Leverkusen at their full pelt, I think, are certainly a good challenger for second place. I think, I know Dortmund have done superb this year, but I think if Leverkusen can, you know, protect that team, keep the same 11, then they've got a good chance. So Toprak for me would be centre half.
Yeah, so my second centre half is John Anthony Brooks from Hertha Berlin. And he's perhaps not one of the most obvious choices, but again, if I'm looking at these players in this team and thinking who has individually performed so much so that their team's based around it, he stands out for me. He's perhaps not the best centre-back in the league at the moment, but he's 23 years old, and I think he has really came on leaps and bounds this season. And perhaps most importantly, one kind of pattern that I saw emerge with Hertha's season was that more often than not, when he was injured for minimal spells of the season, their form just took an absolute nosedive. So again, alongside Mats Hummels, I think the American stands out as a player who, a central defender, who that defence and the team in whole as a whole was entirely based around. So if you're looking at central defenders who are integral to how their teams play, I can't think of any besides Mats Hummels and John Anthony Brooks as the standout, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Brooks, I think, is that he has all the raw attributes to be a really world-class centre half. I mean, he's quick, strong, powerful. I mean, he's, what, 6 foot two or three, maybe? Dominant in the air. I think, like you say, he probably needs a little bit of maybe a little bit of tutoring, a little bit of, you know, good coaching. Someone like Thomas Tuchel would be the perfect mentor for him, perhaps. But yeah, I mean, I think Brooks plays well within the structure. I mean, what we've seen with Hertha this year, obviously, is they had a great first half of the season, but second half of the season, they've kind of regressed to the mean a little bit. And Brooks maybe, I don't think it's Brooks' fault per se that they've stumbled. I think maybe they've just not been as clinical and they're taking their chances. I mean, they don't create a lot of chances. Their expected goals metric is pretty low. Don't do a Craig Bully on me when I say that. But Brooks at the back has been really good, and when he did drop out, you know, as you can see with the results, when they lost all the games. So
well, that's exactly it. I mean, we could argue all day about which defenders are the best in the league, but for me, it stands out that when he drops out of the team, Hertha really just go, you know, they fall apart. So,
yeah, if you're looking at the results in the second half of the season, I mean, they were competitive all the way up until match day 27 when they were third in the table. Brooks gets injured. They get horsed at Mönchengladbach.
Yeah.
They draw with Hanover.
That was a huge game. Drawing with Hanover at the time was just a huge blow to the team.
Yeah. I mean, okay, they lost the last minute goal at Hoffenheim to lose that 1-2-1. Then he was out for the two games against Bayern Munich and Bayer Leverkusen. They come back and they lose late on against Darmstadt. I mean, when you put all that together, it's a pretty damning set of results there without John Anthony Brooks. Maybe that's been a big part of their downfall.
I mean, I can't speak for Hertha fans because I'm not a Hertha fan, but I think if you asked most Hertha fans, they would probably say, you know, losing Brooks is a huge blow to the team. So and to me, that's exceptional credit to the way he's played this season for a team who've done so well to get into the position which they were in, even where they finished, is still incredibly impressive. And I think Brooks played a huge part in that. Before we move on to midfield, we should point out that we have missed out yet another important Bayern Munich player in Jerome Boateng. So,
yeah, I mean, I think there's fair reason for that. I mean, he obviously got injured in the first game of the second half of the season against Hamburg, and has been out. Ever since. I mean, his first game back was against Atletico. No, it was before that. What's that? He played 90 minutes. Saturday before Atletico, the opposition passes me by, but I mean, Boateng was the cornerstone of that Bayern team in the first half of the season, and this is why it's difficult to pigeonhole, you know, a starting 11 out of the whole season, because I think with Bayern, and this is going to reflect, I think, both of our selections, is that, you know, certain Bayern players have stepped up at different points of the season. Boateng, I think, certainly was without doubt one of the best performers in the first half of the season. Joshua Kimmich, for example, I think he was outstanding at centre-half. Very impressive, the way that he handled all those big games. Dortmund away especially. I know that Pep Guardiola's rant with him after the game was what kind of caught the attention on social media, but in that game, I was really, really impressed at how he dealt with that. And if I'm looking at Bayern centre-halves, I know obviously now they've got Boateng and Hummels, but I wouldn't have been against Kimmich playing centre-half next year, because I think he showed that, you know, he could defend well. Mm. I know that there was, you know, for example, instances against Benfica maybe where he wasn't so reliable with the long balls. I mean, obviously the goal that they lost in Benfica was a bit of a calamity. But I think, you know, you could point fingers at other players. David Alaba, for example, and that's why David Alaba hasn't got into my team defensively this year. I don't think he's been great. He's played centre half quite a few times. But Kimmich, yeah, I think you can make a good argument, even though it was only a kind of small stint in the season. But I think similar with Boateng. Just didn't play enough to justify getting into the team of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think our colleague John Harding will no doubt be pulling out his luscious locks, screaming at his audio device of choice over why Niner was a pick Boateng. But I think you're absolutely right. He just simply hasn't played enough. And if he had ran out the whole season the way he had been playing it before his injury, then he would have been a shoo-in, because you think, as John would quite happily say if he was here, and I'm quite happy to agree with him, is I think he is probably the best central defender in the world when he's fit. And he probably will go on to prove that in the European Championships this summer, which I think offers a unique insight, because I think if football fans come August or July are probably thinking who's the best player in German football over the last year, most of them will probably quite happily just go, oh, Jerome Boateng, because he was good for Bayern and he was great at the European Championships. But I think it's quite important to point out at this time before we go into the summer that he didn't play a full campaign with Bayern per se, and that's why we haven't picked him. David Alaba, for different reasons, in my opinion. He's another one who a lot of people will be wondering why he's not. He's just been playing too many positions for me. He hasn't been a standout left-back enough anyway. At centre-back, I actually think he's looked quite suspect at times this season. The Juventus game comes to mind, but there's been a few other blunders.
Atletico away as well.
Yep, quite a few blunders at top. Although we're not counting Champions League performances per se, but even still, I just don't think he has. I would like to put him in at left back, but he just hasn't done enough. He hasn't played enough at left back for me. So,
A special mention for Cedar Tasky's contribution against Darmstadt when Darmstadt won it up at half time. Highlight of the season, perhaps. But
behave yourself, right? So we'll move on to midfield and the two central midfielders. Why don't you give us both? You've got three, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm going total football, and it's 4-3-3.
How about you name one, and then I'll do one, and then we'll do one.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, first things first. At the base, I really think this is probably one of the shoe-in positions, so the shoe-in kind of additions to my team is Julian Weigl from Borussia Dortmund. Signing of the season, possibly. I mean, I have this argument with Schmelitarian on Twitter that he wasn't up. I mean, obviously he said he wasn't a prominent figure in 1860's campaign last year. I actually disagree, because I saw a lot of 1860 last year up until, you know, the playoff against Holstein Kiel, and I thought Weigl looked a standout. He was an absolute standout, sometimes playing centre-back, sometimes playing midfield. You could tell that was a class player. The biggest surprise, I think, is just how well he's adapted to the Bundesliga, because, you know, obviously this is the first year under Thomas Tuchel. It's a big change in style of football. I mean, 1860 Munich certainly do not play the kind of intricacy that Dortmund play with, and just how well he's done, how mature he's looked. I mean, it's just incredible how a player can look so mature. Certainly when he deals with the media, I think he comes across really well, very bright, and tactically very good. In the big games, I think he's delivered. And, you know, I think in terms of, you know, that number six position, you know, he's very much in the mould of Sergio Busquets. I can see a lot of similarities in just how he picks up positions. And we see that, I think, this is the Guardiola rant with Joshua Kimmich, I think, after the game against Dortmund, that the build-up play is so important. And, okay, Dortmund have Matsumos, for example, who can do that, but Weigl is just so pivotal to that build-up play functioning. So for me, he's an absolute shoo-in holding midfield.
Yeah, let me jump in there, because I've actually picked Weigl as well as one of my central midfielders, and I completely agree with you. I think if someone was to say to me, is he your player of the season? You know, perhaps. You know, I think as good as any, in my opinion. Just the way that nobody had... I'm not saying nobody knew who he was. Plenty knew who he was, but for him to come from 1860 and then come in... When he signed for Bayern, most people thought, OK, that's one for the future. He'll sit on the bench and he can be cover for Nuri Sahin when he inevitably gets injured. But the way in which he has walked into this team during the pre-season tour in Asia, and immediately he became that pivot that Tuchel has built his entire midfield on.
Yeah.
And even during the pre-season, you're like, okay, this kid's had a great pre-season, but, you know, when the league games start kicking in, you know, Nuri Sahin's going to come in, Gundogan's going to come in, and we'll go back to normal. It just didn't happen. He kept playing, and he kept getting better and better. And it really has been, the only way I can describe Weigl, I've done it before, is revelation. It really has been an absolute revelation for me at such a young age. And, you know, people are suggesting, there's a lot of links to him moving to Manchester City, Pep's desperate to sign him. And even though they're just rumours, I can completely understand them, because he is exactly the kind of player that Pep Guardiola would absolutely daft for. Thomas Tuchel deserves immense credit for the manner in which not only has he brought... I mean, sure, the kid's got the talent, so it's one thing to just throw him in a team, but the manner in which Tuchel has made sure that he's got the absolute best out of him. Weigl isn't tasked with playing box-to-box like some other young players, like, for example, Granit Xhaka. He's not tasked with playing box-to-box. He's just put in that team, and he's given the time to do exactly what he wants to do, which is... Take the ball, pass it, like you say, like Sergio Busquets does. And I can't think of any other player besides maybe Joshua Kimmich, who offers so much promise and intrigue. It looks like a young Xabi Alonso, you know, or a young Sergio Busquets. There doesn't seem to be any roof to what this guy could offer in the future. And I think Dortmund fans are exceptionally excited to see how he does.
I mean, without wanting to, you know, sensationalise it, I think you'd be really hard-pushed, I think, in European football to find a holding midfielder who's been so impressive and so consistent this year. I mean, Dortmund obviously haven't played in the Champions League, which I think you kind of have to take into consideration when you make such an assessment. But if Dortmund were playing in the Champions League, I think they would certainly be, you know, a quarter-final team quite easily. And if that was the case, then Julian Weigl would be getting rave reviews. And it's interesting, if you were to mention Julian Weigl maybe to a Premier League addict, we'd know who he was.
Yeah.
And from Dortmund's point of view, that's probably a good thing, because then they'll be able to keep him. And he'll probably be the cornerstone for years to come. But, you know, yeah, outstanding player.
If I could add something before I let you move on to your next one. One moment this season where he did look human to me was in the both legs against Liverpool. Now, you could argue that Dortmund just entirely capitulated the team in general. And that's fine. Well, it's not fine, but can't blame Weigl for any of it. But I just thought for large parts, especially the game at Anfield, he looked almost lost. And I know that just seemed to be a really special game in so many ways, and Dortmund just didn't look as though they could Tuchel's side just, it's still so young, just didn't look as though they could handle that pressure. And Weigl, in perhaps particular, was one who was susceptible to that. So just a small caveat, To put next to what an outstanding season he's had. But I'll let you move on to your next player.
Yeah, my second choice would be Mark Bendayed from Mönchengladbach. You mentioned revelation with Julian Weigl. I think you'd have to say the same about Dowd, because I don't think anyone really had him on the radar. Certainly, Gladbach obviously do have a very prodigious youth system that always seems to churn out really good young players, but I don't think Dowd was on the radar per se as being a holding midfield player. I mean, he played in a lot of forward positions in the youth team, but he's done so well. I mean, I think actually the deeper that he moved, obviously when Xhaka was suspended and stuff like that, I thought he looked just as good. He's got a great passing range, and he's got a lot of power. I think people are talking about him possibly being a replacement for Gundogan at Dortmund next year. Not really sold on that yet. I still think he needs exposure at the highest level. So far, it's been really impressive. You know, Champions League games this year, I think certainly the last three Champions League games that Gladbach played, thought he was probably their most impressive performer. He scored 5 goals this year from midfield, set up 9. What really more can you say than that? I mean, I think he's been really good. Still very young. I think Gladbach will be hard pushed to keep him, but I think he still needs a little bit more time at the highest level.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he does this summer, whether he goes with Germany to European Championships. I don't think he will.
No. Probably to the Olympics.
Well, that's the thing. The caveat
to that would be Gladbach's Champions League qualifiers, potentially. Yeah. That might be a problem. But yeah, I mean, Gladbach's season has been Jekyll and Hyde, but... he's been the big plus point, really.
Yeah, like Weigl, he seems like this young kid who just doesn't seem to let anything faze him. Yeah. And he probably had Kimmich then. You know, Germany are just so blessed with these young... These three midfielders who could be the German national team's central midfield for the next 10 years easily, you know. I didn't pick him for my team, partly because I knew you were going to pick him, so I thought I'd do something else. One player who I've gone with, and perhaps another one out of left field, is actually Lewis Holtby. Hamburg haven't really got as much press this season because they haven't been pushing for European places, and they haven't been an absolute disaster like they have in the last 2 or 3 years. We all like to kick Hamburg when they're down and they're pushing for relegation, the old dinosaur. But every time I've watched Hamburg, I really think Holtby has looked like a real standout performer. Me and you both went to the Stuttgart game earlier in the year, and he... even though Hamburg looked horrendous, he really stood out as a player. And I think that's been large. I think that game really summed up how his season has gone. He's too good for Hamburg. I think he's far too good for Hamburg. And
yeah, absolutely.
He looks so composed in the ball, and he looks back to the best he was at Schalke. He's now playing further back the field. He's not playing even that number 10 or wing role that he was playing when he first came through. He's now almost like number 6 role, like Weigl. Although he's more of a box-to-box, maybe. He likes to get up the pitch. But he looks composed, and I really wouldn't be surprised if there's big teams pushing for him this summer. I remember speaking to him after that Stuttgart game, and they just lost that game even though they were expected to really challenge, and he was absolutely furious, and he just looked, he's so hungry to get back to where he was. And I think, considering the way that his career has really taken a tailspin in the last few seasons, it was great to see him look back to his best for Hamburg this season.
Yeah, I mean, his career is quite interesting because obviously when he came through at Schalke and was on loan at Mainz, he played on kind of the right side of a front three. He was an attacking player predominantly. Then he goes to Spurs, plays kind of sometimes in midfield, sometimes in the 10 position, and then obviously comes back to Hamburg and is one of kind of two holding midfield players. Sometimes plays the kind of more dynamic box-to-box role, sometimes plays as the number 6 in front of the back four. But I think one of the biggest differences for me, I think, based on last year, is how fit he looks, how hungry and how quick. Last year I just thought, okay, his use of the ball was average, but I just thought he looked a little bit slow. He's slow to move the ball, and that was kind of like, that was just really like kind of Hamburg's style of football last year in a microcosm, almost Hopi's performances last year. But this year, he's so hungry, he digs into challenges. I know that the purists don't really like that style of play, but I just love a midfielder who does that, who can win possession, who can press. And someone like Holtby, I mean, I think he could play easily for a Mönchengladbach or a Schalke, yeah, or even a Hertha, someone like that. Obviously Hamburg probably pay him quite a lot. He's, you know, playing for a huge club in Germany. So I would be surprised if he moved, but in terms of his career trajectory, at least it's back on track.
Yeah, I mean, I would go so far as to say if Gladbach were to sell Xhaka this summer, and they have someone like De Hood or in midfield, I don't know how the fans would feel about signing a player from Hamburg, but I could see him move into that Gladbach team and do a similar role. So for me, I think he's deserving of praise and he's made it into my team. So that's my two central midfielders. But you have a third, don't you?
Yeah, a third, but there's a massive question mark next to it, and I'll explain that. And I've gone for Arturo Vidal from Bayern. And the reason I've got a question mark is because, you know, what we were just talking about there with Boateng in terms of our selections, you know, has a player played enough? And has that player played consistently enough to get into a team this season? Now, I think there's a bit of a caveat there with Vidal because I think Bayern would have really struggled without him this year because he's just been a real impetus in midfield. He's just given them a real extra dimension. He has been their big game performer in the second half of the season. Every single big game, he's been the guy who's delivered. And I know that he gets a lot of stick. He gets a lot of stick for maybe not being as flamboyant or as exhilarating to watch, but I think he's been outstanding. And I listened to one podcast after, I can't remember which game it was, it might have been the Atletico second leg, someone saying that Vidal regularly doesn't play well in top games. And that's just absolute nonsense. I mean, he is a big game player. If anything, he's a big game player. You know, and every single knockout Champions League game, he was Bayern Munich's best player. And it goes all the way back to the Juventus game. You know, he was the guy who dug them out. He was the guy who was battling, winning challenges, you know, willing the team on. He was almost like Pep's leader on the pitch for, you know, the Juventus game. Benfica scored the goal at home, scores the goal away. Atletico, he's probably one of their only guys who gets past marks in the first leg. And second leg, I thought he was absolutely terrific. Probably one of the best games I've ever seen him play.
Yeah, I think I can see, you're right. And the reason you're right, the reasons why you're right is perhaps why I didn't put him in my team, because this season for me, Vidal has almost been like Pep's ace up his sleeve, whereby he, you know, in the real crunch games, he has, you know, he's pulled out fantastic performances. The reason I didn't put him in my team is because for large parts of the Bundesliga season, he's just kind of, it looked like he's been phoning it in.
Yeah,
but sure, Bayern fans won't care a jot because Bayern could have played the reserve team for large parts of this Bundesliga season and he would have still been first. And if you ask Bayern players, Bayern fans would probably say, you know what, I'm quite happy for Vidal to phone it in for, you know, the first, you know, 8 months of the season, and then, you know, he pulls out all his tricks in the knockout games. So
no, I mean, no, that's why I've got a big question mark. I mean, like I say, you know, we're talking about the consistency element, and I don't think he has been consistent across the whole season. But in big games, I think he's delivered, and that's why he would get into my team. I think you could give special mention to someone like Junuzovic at Bremen. I know that Bremen, not the most impressive side, and they just about saved themselves on Saturday. They'll survive for another year in the Bundesliga. But I think Junuzovic was actually pretty impressive in midfield. He's the guy who digs them out of difficult situations. He's got a great assist record. I think he's got 13 assists this year. Probably most of them are from set pieces, per se. But, But I think Vidal probably has to be in there. In terms of other midfielders,
Can I add one? Who I think if he had remained fit the whole season, he would have probably been a shoo-in for me, and would perhaps be Kevin Campbell, just the fact that the way he arrived at Dortmund and then just completely fell out of love with the club, but he just didn't get anywhere at Dortmund, and then he moves to Leverkusen under Schmidt, who's obviously his coach at Red Bull Salzburg. And he looked back to his bet. He looked like the player that Dortmund had signed, and he's looked outstanding. And the thing is, he's more of a forward or a winger, but Schmidt's played him as a number six almost, and he's looked like a great playmaker. And when fit, he's looked like one of the best central midfielders in the Bundesliga. The reason he's not in the team, like many of the players we mentioned, because he just didn't play a full campaign. So he'd be one person who I'd mention. But unless you have any more, we can move on to the forwards. So at right wing, we both have the same player again, and I think this is with obvious reasons.
Yeah, I mean, player of the season for me, Henrik Mkhitaryan. And again, he's not been, well, I would say flashy. He has been awesome to watch, and some of his football is just out of this world. But in terms of what the world nowadays sees as a classy football player and as the most exciting type of player, like Messi, etc., Mkhitaryan isn't that. But in terms of consistency, in terms of his return, in terms of just how efficient he is in the last third, I mean, he's just been fantastic. And again, if there is a player who embodies the resurgence of Dortmund under Thomas Tuchel, I think Mkhitaryan has to be probably that guy. Last year, under Jurgen Klopp, he looked pretty poor. You know, he and again, you go back to games. The one game I can remember was against Real Madrid when they went out, and he missed an absolute sitter late on, and it just summed up possibly a lack of confidence. I mean, he does seem a bit of an introvert. Does seem like a guy who kind of needs that kind of G up. And if you read a lot of the interviews now, he says, you know, the way that Thomas Tuchel's spoken to me, I feel great. I love playing for Dortmund. I've got that confidence back. Obviously, Tuchel gave him a book to, you know, try and...
Was it a tennis book?
Yeah, it was a tennis book by... Oh, I can't remember the tennis book, actually. But it was something about, yeah, the mentality of a tennis player. And, yeah, I mean, I just think he's been wonderful. And
I think, I think you're right. I think breathtaking would be the word I used to describe him, because it's interesting you mentioned Messi, because I think... Although he's not in Lionel Messi.
Nobody is Messi.
Of course, no one ever will be. But the way that he can dribble sometimes, and the way he can dance through defences, yeah. You know, it gives shades of what Messi does at Barcelona, and perhaps maybe the best alternative. I mean, perhaps the closest thing the Bundesliga has to Lionel Messi. Mm. I mean, 23 goals and 32 assists, according to transfermarket.co.uk, is what I've got in front of me. And it's incredible. And he...
Do you not think as well, though, that the thing with Mkhitaryan is that if he had been playing for Man United, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, everyone would think he's wonderful. Because he plays for Dortmund. I'm not saying Dortmund are an unfashionable club, because that's not true at all, but I think certainly since they've fallen out of the real intense media spotlight in terms of, you know, playing Champions League football and really commanding international press, I think his reputation certainly hasn't been as strong as it should be.
Yeah, because that's an interesting point, because whenever we put out his stats on, you know, for example, the Deutsche Welle account, you know, his stats go viral, and then you have all these people in England or India or Pakistan or wherever across the world who follow the Bundesliga and like, or don't follow the Bundesliga, or rather follow the Premier League, like, whoa, where's this guy been? No one,
of course,
because he's not playing Champions League. So it'll be interesting to see when Dortmund will get back in Champions League, if he stays at Dortmund, of course, that's the next big thing. If he does, and he's doing it, then we'll see maybe his reputation elevate to the level of, you know, the Neymars, etc. But one point I was going to make that has completely escaped me. Yeah, the reason I think, perhaps another reason why he's so unfounded is, like you said, under Klopp, he wasn't doing his very best. And I think another player similar, perhaps, is Aubameyang. And he did quite well in the last... He was getting better under Klopp, but... I think the reason that Mkhitaryan has really excelled with Tuchel is because Dortmund are now back playing that short passing game. And I think in the last campaign, at least under Klopp, Dortmund kind of reverted to a long ball kind of style of football. Yeah. And at long times they bypassed the midfield entirely for, you know, either Lewandowski or Aubameyang to pull the ball out there. So they're now back playing attacking football on the ground, and it suits Mkhitaryan, and he's flourished like a number of players at Dortmund under Tuchel.
Yeah, I mean, you said, you mentioned Aubameyang there. I mean, in terms of guys who have improved so much under Tuchel, I mean, he's got a, you know, an outstanding reputation as being a man manager, as well as obviously, you know, what they call in Germany a teacher, you know, Fußballlehrer. He's got that kind of style of coaching, and Mkhitaryan, I think, is the perfect example of that. If we move on to the other attackers, I mean, obviously you've got one more.
Should I jump on my left wing then?
Yeah, okay, fire away.
Okay, so my left wing is another perhaps odd choice. People are going to think I've just been joking around today, but I think these guys merit inclusion, and that's, of course, Rafael at Gladbach, who I think, you know, in this Gladbach team who have put most of their emphasis on attacking, I think he's been the real... key player, and he's looked like, and not only does he look like a skillful Brazilian forward, he looks like a seasoned pro. And a team like Gladbach, it doesn't really have a number of like proven players. He just looks like he's so cool on the ball. He's got 15 goals, 11 assists, and some of the games which he scored those goals and assists in have been really vital for Gladbach. I mean, I'm looking at the games he's played this season. He scored an assist against Schalke, scored against Hertha Berlin. And then he also got an assist against Bayern Munich as well, when Gladbach beat them 3-1 and continued that unbeaten run. And he's just kept going and going and going this season. And like you said with Mkhitaryan, perhaps the stronger case is that, you know, when these players play for Gladbach, they don't really get the same attention. I think Rafael's been like that for quite a few seasons now. People in Germany obviously appreciate him. I mean, Gladbach are a huge club in Germany, but outside of Germany, people don't really pick on Pond, especially when it's an older player, because he's not sexy, because he's not 23 or 24. But I think Raphael's been such a consistent forward, and he's really helped guide this Gladbach team to the Champions League this season.
Yes, that's a fair point. I mean, I must admit, I think he's a bit of a luxury player. I think you need to have a good team around him to make it work. I just think, certainly in the first five games under Lucien Favre, I just thought, his attitude looked really poor. I just didn't think he gave 100%. I mean, obviously, you can see with the numbers when Andre Schubert comes in, when they beat Augsburg 4-2, you look at the numbers after that, I mean, it's just astonishing, really.
In fact, he's actually scored against the top three. In fact, no, hold on. And he scored against Dortmund, he scored against Hertha, he scored against Bayern Munich. Yeah. I'm trying to find the Leverkusen game, actually. But continue talking, I'll see if I can find it.
I would like to see him apply himself a little bit better. I mean, Favre obviously knew how to get the best out of him because obviously he worked with him at Hertha and in Switzerland. Schubert has been taking that to another level because he's a really integral part of the team. But I think throughout the season, you've seen one of the biggest weaknesses, I think, that Gladbach have, and certainly Andrew Schubert has, is varying their attacking play. Their attacking play is really one-dimensional. If it's not Raphael, if it's not Andre Hahn, if it's not a bit of power, I don't think they have a lot. They don't have very many strikers, if at all. It's one of the huge gaps in that squad. Obviously, they will try and strengthen that this year, but
they do.
I don't think you can rely on Raphael to be your number one provider throughout the season. And Gladbach have just about got there. I mentioned on another podcast, Talking Fußball, that was fourth place was Mainz's to get, I think. And Gladbach were quite lucky to get there. Andre Hahn has been the kind of big guy who's stepped up to the mark in the last few weeks. But, you know, if you look at their squad, I mean, in terms of out-and-out strikers, Josip Drimic, €9 million. What's happened there? I mean, Branimir Hrgota has been backup player. So they don't have anyone else other than Raphael. It's quite astonishing. And fair play to him that he's delivered, you know, such a great return this year. I mean, 15 goals and 10 assists this year. I mean, fair enough, I understand why you've put him in there, but for me, I just think he's one of those guys that you need a little bit more from, I think.
Okay, Ross, who have you gone with at left wing?
I'm a bit of a hypocrite here because I've kind of slaughtered Douglas Costa throughout the season, and his end product is absolutely atrocious at times. It really is. But he's 14 assists this year, and you cannot really argue with that kind of record. If you're looking for an attacking player, obviously I've gone 4-3-3, so I'm kind of looking at it within my team. A player like Douglas Costa gives you so much pace, so much energy. His manipulation of the ball at high speed is just pretty phenomenal, to be honest. And again, as I say, you know, 14 assists this year, most of them coming obviously at the start of the season. I think you got to give him a lot of credit. You know, he's done really well in his first season. I think there's a lot of things he could improve on. Maybe Carlo Ancelotti's the guy to get that out of him. I don't know, but yeah. First season in Germany, very impressive, I think.
Yeah, he has been. You're right. I think that last point is perhaps the most important, to give him credit. This is still his first season in Germany, and full credit to the Ukrainian League. I don't think it holds any real bearing in terms of how players should or shouldn't then move on to play in the Bundesliga. And he's proven that he's obviously too good for the Ukrainian League at Shakhtar, and he's now proven that he can play a role at Bayern. For me, like you said, he seems to have tailed off before the end of the season. And I know we're not specifically meant to be basing these on Champions League performances, but I actually thought he was really quiet and really disappointing in the real crunch games. So, great first season for Bayern, but I think he's still got room to improve. I don't think he's been a revelation like some Bayern fans have suggested to me. I don't think that at all, actually. I still think Frank Ribéry and Arjen Robben are still good head and shoulders above him, actually, in terms of what they bring to the team in really important games. But you're right, in terms of picking up goals and assists every week, then, you know, there's few that have matched him in the Bundesliga. But for me, the only reason I didn't put my team is because I thought he actually tailed off, and when Bayern really needed him, he looked a little quiet, but he's still young and he has room to improve. Number 10, I've gone with Thomas Müller, who I don't think is a real surprise at all. Have you got Müller in your team? No, you haven't. That's interesting. Yeah, I just think, again, with Mkhitaryan, with, you know, somebody like Hummels, he's a household name. And to me, I think he's just been fantastic. I mean, I know under Pep, he hasn't exactly been... he hasn't been really given the free rein that he did under Heinkes. He hasn't really been allowed to be Bayern's golden boy under Guardiola, and I think that's just because he's not a Pep Guardiola player. But with Lewandowski coming into the team, he really looks as though he finally, at least this season alone, he looks like as though Pep finally found a proper use for him. That's not to say he hasn't been great the last two seasons. He has in his own weird way. But I think alongside Lewandowski, the two of them have looked really outstanding. I don't know if you'd call him a strike partnership, but I've got him as a number 10 because I think in my ideal team, he'd be playing off the striker.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very strange player. Very, very strange player. I have been watching the Bundesliga for years and I still cannot really work out what he's good at. And I'm being genuinely honest about that. I just think it's great that he's playing for Bayern Munich, where they're walking over the rest of the Bundesliga. It's great that he's playing for the world's best national team. I'm not disregarding his goal contribution. I think that's, you know, his finishing is outstanding, his intelligence, his ability to play in space. It's all great. But I mean, I actually can understand why Pep Guardiola dropped him for the Atletico game. I actually would say that was a fair decision. I think, you know, in the return leg, said to one of the journalists next to me, said after an hour I'd have hooked Thomas Müller again because he wasn't good enough. He was falling over the ball, he was, you know, struggling to beat players one on one, he wasn't winning any duels. I don't really, if he doesn't have a lot of space to conquer, he doesn't really offer anything. And in that Atletico game, he didn't offer anything. And I'm not basing it on one game. You go back to the Barcelona games, go back to the Real Madrid games. I think in these kind of games, I just don't know if he's that kind of player. And Pep Guardiola, essentially in that second leg, was playing with 10 men. Oof. Because if he doesn't have the space to move into, he doesn't offer anything. His close control isn't great. He doesn't beat players one-on-one. So I can understand why Guardiola dropped him in that game. And I think if Bayern Munich had a second or a third striking option, Pep Guardiola would have hooked Thomas Müller in that second leg as well. Pep Guardiola did not have anyone else other than Mario Götze who could have come on when the chips were down. If he had a second striker like a Pizarro or a Dzeko or Llorente, whatever, where he could, where, you know, because what we've seen from Guardiola this year is the whole philosophy has changed. It's not about, you know, total dominant possession, tiki taka, whatever that means. I know Pep Guardiola hates that, but, you know, finding the spaces, it's been about getting it wide and getting the ball into the box. And in the Bundesliga, it's been fine. It's worked because Thomas Müller's in there or thereabouts. But in the big games, I'm just not sure.
I'll take your point. I think you're right. I don't think he played a great game in the first or the second leg against Atletico. Although I really do think he probably should have played the first leg, because I completely disagree with you. I actually think he is the player who sticks up in these crunch games and just gets the goal. He got two goals and assist against Juventus. He got the goal in the second leg against Benfica. In these knockout games, although you're right that he doesn't fit the system, and I think that's something that's infuriated Pep throughout his time at Bayern, because I think you're probably right. I think Pep, in his ideal situation, he probably would have sold Thomas Müller, or at least dropped him, and he would have went with someone who's perhaps is better suited to his really, really intricate disciplined system. But I think despite that, I think Müller, despite Pep's best intentions, I still think he's been outstanding. I'm not going to judge his entire season on one bad game against Atletico. Sure, you could say, because I think you can negate the idea that he doesn't score in the crunch games, because he did against Juventus, he did against Benfica. And on top of that, him and Lewandowski have just been so outstanding in the Bundesliga season. So
ultimately that's football. I mean, it's difficult to make a quantifiable argument that, okay, you scored against Juventus, score in stoppage time, score with a basic header. You know what? If you stick Pizarro in that position, he'd score exactly the same goal. Arturo Vidal in the game against Atletico, again, charged into the box. He's the guy who makes things happen.
Yeah, but why are we giving Arturo Vidal the credit of sticking up in these big games, but not Müller?
I'm showing that Thomas Müller isn't offering anything special in that team. And I almost think Pep Guardiola is being hamstrung by the fact that he has to pick him. He is being forced to pick Thomas Müller because the reputation with the German media is already so poor. Imagine if he dropped Thomas Müller. You know what I mean? You see the reaction in the Atletico game. He was getting slaughtered for it. And I can totally understand why he did that. The problem is that he didn't have anyone else. And I know that I'm not saying that Bayern don't have any options, but maybe they've not particularly done well in picking the right players. They've got great loads of wingers. Costi, Coman, Ribery, Robin, Götze, somewhere in between. If he had another striker of Lewandowski's kind of style and calibre, someone like Aubameyang, for example, and obviously not suggesting that they sign Aubameyang, but just a striker who's powerful, because that's the style of football he's playing. If you're throwing the ball into the box and there's no space, Thomas Müller doesn't really have
Oh, I totally disagree. He's always there with a knee or a shin to... Here's the thing, though, right? The one game that he did drop Muller was the first leg against Atletico, and that's when he decided, you know what, I want two out-and-out wingers in Douglas Costa and Kingsley Coman to knock the ball into Lewandowski.
Yeah.
He decided, he's like, you know what, I'm going for it. I'm dropping Muller and I'm playing a team I want to play. And they played horrendously. Coman and Costa had a horrendous evening. Yeah. And they just didn't have any bite against Letico.
So no, that's fair. But I think, you know, also you brought in Thiago, didn't you, in midfield? And I don't want to have a go at Thiago based on a Thomas Müller argument. But, you know, to replace Thomas Müller with Thiago, I don't think that's a good call. But if you have another striker, maybe it's Dzeko or whatever, Pizarro, then you could then you can play the style of football that you want to. I must admit, I'm not sure Pep Guardiola is Thomas Müller's biggest fan.
And I think that's quite clear.
Yeah, but I think I can understand the reasons why.
No, I understand why Pep doesn't like him, but that doesn't mean that Thomas Müller isn't a great player. It just means he's not a Pep Guardiola type of player. You know,
he's
a Heinkes kind of player. He's maybe a Van Gaal type of player, and he's probably going to be an Ancelotti type of player as well. And my point is that despite Pep's best, it's only now in his third season that we've actually seen Müller look as though he actually has a role. And that was simply playing off Lewandowski this season.
But I think like Müller, Thomas Müller's looked at his best when he has been the absolute focal point of the attack.
So you think he's better as the lone striker?
Because I think if you look at Thomas Müller in his Bayern career, he wasn't particularly good with Mario Gomez. He was fantastic with Mario Mandzukic, because Mario Mandzukic would always drift out to the wing, essentially leaving the space for Thomas Müller to thrive. Robert Lewandowski started off a little bit like that. Now, Robert Lewandowski is the main number 9.
Mm-hmm.
What does Thomas Müller offer? He's not combining with Lewandowski. He's not.
I think he definitely does.
I'm not sure he does.
I think they've been great.
He doesn't. He doesn't like create space for Lewandowski. He doesn't, you know, set up Lewandowski with a great bit of skill or a cross or anything like that.
I couldn't disagree more. I really couldn't. I think they've basically been playing as a strike partnership this season. I think they've been exceptional at it.
Fair enough. I will agree to disagree. We will have to.
Fortunately, the final player on our team we both have, which is, of course, Robert Lewandowski.
All hail the gluten-free diet.
Yeah, and the cake before dinner.
Yes.
Now, I've said to you in the past that when Lewandowski was at his absolute best this season for Bayern, I think he was probably the best player in the world outside of Messi and Ronaldo. And
I'd even say before Ronaldo.
You think he's better than Ronaldo?
Well, at that time when he was playing
certain parts of this. Now, a lot of people definitely would not agree with that. There's a lot of people say Neymar, Suarez,
Come at me.
But I really, really, really do think this guy's in the best. I think he's probably the best number 9 in the world.
What do you think of the argument that Luis Suarez is a better number 9 than Robert Lewandowski? I think that's complete nonsense, to be honest. I'm sorry. Luis Suarez is a good player. He's a very, very good player. He's obviously an elite player. But Robert Lewandowski, potentially, is probably possibly this generation's defining centre-forward.
Yeah.
I think he's that important. Suarez is part of probably the best collection of attacking players of all time, because he has Messi, he has Neymar, he's got, you know, a great midfield behind him. Great. And not discrediting that. Also, most of the Spanish defences are absolutely hopeless. So if he scores 5 goals against Granada, great, who cares? I think...
What happens when Lewandowski scores 5 against Wolfsburg?
Well, I think the Bundesliga is defensively a much, much harder league. That's my opinion on it.
I think we're both kind of hammering home the same point here. And if I could maybe make one suggestion, it would be, imagine Lewandowski was Brazilian. He would be in that front. He would be playing every single game for Brazil. He could have made a completely difference to his World Cup. Now, I'm not suggesting that Poland are a minnow international side, because they could quite easily go to the European Championships and cause all sorts of bother. But I think the fact that he's not, you know, he's not Brazilian, or he's not French, he's not German, perhaps, you could imagine he played for this German team.
Do you not think, though, that's an advantage to him in international competition, because he is the focal point of that team? And you see now...
I just mean the tension he doesn't seem to get.
That's fair enough, but I think certainly...
I mean, he's twice the paler that Costa is, the Brazilian forward for Chelsea, in my opinion. You know.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
So he doesn't even play for Brazil. He plays for Spain, doesn't he? But
he does, yes.
But no. So for me, and our point that was worth making as well is, when we talk about Bayern this season, the way they have kind of drifted through games, Lewandowski for so many games this season has really been the one who's, I mean, Bayern for large parts of the Bundesliga campaign against lesser sides, they've shown up half asleep, and yeah. And for when Lewandowski I thought was at his best, maybe just after January, February, he was winning games single-handedly, in my opinion, for Bayern.
And I think that's one of the big arguments with like Aguero or Suarez. Lewandowski is winning games on his own for Bayern at times. One game comes to mind was when they played Augsburg at home. Augsburg were winning. They got a dodgy penalty. But Lewandowski was the guy who just thought, you know what, stuff this, stuff the tactics. I'm going to get the ball and I'm going to charge half the length of the pitch, battering people out of the way and make sure you win this game. I think, without a doubt, he is the generation's defining centre-forward. He's strong, powerful, got a great eye for goal. Technique is wonderful. He's a playmaker. I mean, you obviously look at the diet thing. You can see that he's got leaner, stronger, quicker.
He's not called Rab the Abs Lewandowski for nothing.
Yes, and 30 goals in the league this year. You can't argue with that.
I think you're right. I think he really does seem to have everything. I mean, he can throw his weight around with the biggest central defenders. He can header, he can volley, he can shoot from distance. He can dribble past defence as well, which is something people... So many times he's picked the ball up in the halfway line for Bayern and he's ran 34 yards, which he doesn't seem to get any credit for. So I think quite fairly he's the spearhead for both of our teams. So
yeah, plenty of special mentions I think for that position though. You know, someone like Pizarro in the second half of the season, I think he scored something like 11 goals in 9 games. For a 37-year-old, that's not too bad.
It's not too bad.
So give him credit for that. Modesta had 15 goals this year. If Modesta wasn't doing that for Cologne, they would have some problems. Sandro Wagner, all hail Sandro Wagner, 14 goals this year for Darmstadt.
Chicharito as well. He comfortably probably been the third best striker in the league, which is nothing to be ashamed of.
No, of course. But
there's the main one who nine of us have picked.
Aubameyang, yes.
Who I think Dortmund fans quite fairly be like, well, what's going on there? But I think the two of them, there's very little between them. But I just think at this moment, Lewandowski has probably offered more. I mean, if Dortmund had been playing the Champions League and got to a semi-final and Aubameyang was pulling the same performances as Lewandowski, then you could say, you know what, they are head-to-head. But I think this season, then, Lewandowski stands out for me.
So to round it off, Coach of the Year.
Well,
the man in the tracksuit in Germany, which is a bit odd because everyone here wears suits. Why don't you wear a tracksuit if you're a manager, really? I mean,
there's two types of managers, isn't there? There's the one who wears the tracksuit, Martin O'Neill-esque, perhaps. Yes. And then you got the one who has to wear the suit, perhaps like Walter Smith, if we could put a Glaswegian twang on this. Why don't you go first, then? You're
trying to steal my idea.
You pick one and I'll try and see if I agree with you or not.
I'm just from the Dirk Schuster Cathedral. That's me.
Really?
Yes.
You're going...
Outstanding. Wow. Outstanding achievement.
Wow.
Absolutely superb. Darmstadt, they have absolutely no right to still be in the Bundesliga, right? I mean, okay, we love them, but they're not a great side. What he has got out of that team, I'm maybe opening this up a little bit more than just manager of the season, but to get back-to-back promotions and then take the team into the Bundesliga and then to do what he did, I'm sorry, I think that's just fabulous. I tipped them to be bottom in the league at the start of the season, like most people did. You could have a special mention for someone like Ralf Hasenhüttl, who I think is certainly the more tactically adept coach, but I just love the mentality. I love the determination, you know, maximising what you have. And I think Schuster, I think he's basically... You could mean, like, the kind of complex thing about the Bundesliga is that some teams have performed well at different points of the season. You know, you look at Julian Nagelsmann for saving Hoffenheim, who were joint bottom when he took over. You look at Marcus Weinzierl getting Augsburg another year in the Bundesliga, which again is another really good achievement. You look at someone like Andrew Schubert for turning things around. I know that people won't find that very popular, but he's got them fourth place. That's fair. Martin Schmidt. I mean, there's a lot of great coaches who have done good things at different points of the season. The caveat to the Mainz, obviously, is that they probably should have got fourth. You probably have to take that into consideration. Paul Dardai, great start to the season.
Right, before you run through the whole league, let me tell you mine, okay? And I'll give you reasons why.
And I'm gonna absolutely slaughter you for this. I know what's coming.
Do you?
Yes.
Roger Schmidt.
Yes.
Roger Schmidt.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why I didn't pick Thomas Tuchel. I didn't pick Thomas Tuchel because I thought Bayern just didn't offer anything when he came up against Bayern. Sorry, I'm talking absolute nonsense. Why I didn't pick too close because Dortmund didn't offer anything to come off against Bayern. And I think Tuchel has done absolutely everything right. There's no doubt about it. Bayern, I keep saying Bayern. If Dortmund's points tally this season would be enough to win the Bundesliga, what, last five or six seasons? There's some stat going around, like, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's exceptionally impressive. The manner in which he's turned his team around, exceptionally impressive. But the two caveats, in my opinion, are that he didn't do enough to challenge Bayern. They got thumped at the start of the season, and in that 0-0 game, it was 0-0 or 1-1, I can't remember.
0-0.
0-0. I spent the entire game thinking, what the hell are Dortmund waiting for? They looked as though they could really push on and really thrown caution to the wind and then really went for Bayern, and they didn't. They looked scared, and they didn't look as though... Tuchel just didn't think, you know what, I don't think this team can beat Bayern right now. That's fine. If he's thinking, you know, we'll take second place, that's fine. But in my opinion, that's why I'll play against them. And of course, at the end of the day, even though Bayern were... horrendous against Bayern. Sorry, Dortmund were horrendous in the last season against Klopp. There's no denying that Thomas Tuchel still has easily the second best team in the Bundesliga this season. He still has the second best resources. So, despite how well Dortmund have done under Tuchel, the caveat has to be that he has had everything he needs at Dortmund. The other reason I didn't pick Martin Schmidt was, as you said, if they got into the Champions League, then I think he would have been the shoe-in for me as coach of the year. The reason I picked Roger Schmidt is because I think he's had much less to work with than Dortmund. When we've seen key players move out of this Leverkusen team through injury, and they've had a lot of injuries. They've seen Bender get injured, they've seen Campbell get injured, Chicharito has been missing for slight parts of the season. And I just think, even though they have taken dips and turns, I just think comfortably the third best team in the league this year. So I'm going to go for him.
Yeah, well, I mean, where do I start? I mean, 6 weeks ago, everyone was calling him for the sack because they were eighth in the league.
No, fools were calling him for the sack.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think they underperformed for long spells of the season. The injury question, well, if you're from the Raymond Verheyen school of thought, you'd have to say that only an idiot doesn't know about periodisation. I'm sorry, but, you know, such an extent of injuries is not just unfortunate. It's not unlucky. I think he's maybe demanding too much of his players. The way they went out of Europe was rubbish.
I'll give you that one. Yeah, the way they fell out of Europa League, definitely.
It was one of the most half-hearted efforts I've seen in a long, long time. They are comfortably the third best team in the league. They've comfortably got the third best set of players. Chicharito.
I don't think that's fair.
No, I think they do. I absolutely do. Chicharito is an outstanding striker. He's a Mexican international, plays at World Cup, plays Copa America, whatever. You've got Karim Bellarabi, who has some like 12 assists this year. Julian Brandt scored 6 consecutive games. Kevin Campbell obviously was injured for parts of the season, but like you say, if he was fit for the whole year, I think we would say that, you know, he would be in the team. Christoph Kramer, Lars Bender. I think they've got loads of options. So for me, I don't think he's done anything spectacular. Third place is what Leverkusen probably should be going for.
Yeah, but you know what? It's also what Schalke should be going for. It's also what Wolfsburg should be going for. It's also what Gladbach should be going for. And hold on, in a league that if there's one thing that seems to stand out in the Bundesliga this season, is that it seems to be so exceptionally hard to be consistent outside the top two. We've seen it in the Premier League as well. Teams are just chopping off points off each other. Schalke are a mess, Wolfsburg are a mess, Gladbach for the first 10 games of the season were a mess, and for Leverkusen to come out of that, you know, not spotless, they've got plenty of bruises and scratches, but to come out of that and comfortably be the third best team, I really think that deserves immense credit. Now, sure, it might not be as notably impressive as, so for example, Darmstadt or Ingolstadt staying in the league. That's absolutely fine. I give you that. I mean, can't really argue with what you said because, you know, literally on paper is the most impressive. But I just think Schmidt deserves it. I mean, I actually said a few weeks ago, I said outside of maybe Tuchel's impressive. I think this was actually before the Liverpool tie. I said, you know, you take Thomas Tuchel out of the equation and Mainz's rise up the league, I think Roger Schmidt's been the best. I think Leverkusen and Roger Schmidt have been the most consistent team. Now, since then, Mainz have fallen apart, and I thought the way in which Dortmund actually felt the Europa League was actually quite disappointing. I was really expecting them to actually thump Liverpool. Now, there's reasons why they didn't. So that's just the way. Now, maybe you're right. Perhaps I'm being too specific on the top half of the table, but I think if you look at the top half of the table, I think he's been the best coach in the top half.
Yeah, possibly. Special mention to Pep Guardiola. I think championship winner, 3 titles in a row. we had this debate about on episode one. You can listen to it if you have subscribed to us on iTunes.
I think the listeners are probably quite sick of us talking about it.
Okay, Champions League was a bit of a disappointment. I thought they'd made a good fight against a potential winner. I think the regression to the mean probably shows what level they're at. Fifth place in the Bundesliga.
Where were they predicted at the start of the season? That's fair.
I'll give you that. I think he's done a good job. I just don't know how good this Hertha team is because they were so brilliant in the first half. Second half, they were a bit gash. So it's hard to really know where they are. I mean, is the table a reflection of their ability, or have Schalke maybe not performed as well as they could have? Wolfsburg haven't performed as well as they could have. So I don't really know. It's a hard one. That's not really a hard one to call, but I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt for getting Hertha into Europe. That's the most important thing.
But is Hertha's rise up the table not just as impressive as Darmstadt's?
No, I don't think so. No.
No?
No. What Hertha's? Hertha's a big club.
Aye, but they were
playing
predicted
in
to
the Bundesliga for the
they
last
were, they were predicted to, you know, challenge or fight relegation this season, obviously. And if end up finishing
yeah,
fifth?
Yeah, possibly.
I mean, if that was Augsburg, we'd be saying they should. If it was Augsburg, we'd
yeah.
be, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Fair point. I give you that. I think, like you say, the Bundesliga has been a bit weird season because so many teams have been inconsistent. If Wolfsburg hadn't been so inconsistent, it's hard to say whether Hertha would have got that place. But fair play to them. Yeah, it's a good call. I mean, I certainly would agree with that. I just think Darmstadt on, you know, the kind of resources that they've had and just how they've managed to compete, you know, doing so well against the top teams, I think that deserves massive credit.
Well, it doesn't matter because next season Nagelsmann's going to get it, so
of course,
it'll
yeah.
be sorted.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, well, I hope you have enjoyed today's show. If you are extremely offended by either choices myself or Ross have made, you can, of course, get in touch with us on the Twitter account at Tribune Podcast, or preferably you'd want to get in touch with us on Facebook, where Ross and I will be uploading our own 11, and you can comment underneath each picture and let us know why you think we're exceptionally wrong in any way you feel. So once again, thanks very much for listening to today's podcast. Again, if you're enjoying what we're doing, do get on iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. They do help immensely in us moving up the rankings. And thanks once again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.